everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show. I guess you guys didn't get the memo. And when I say you guys, Jim Nintzel with me in studio today, my co-media host. Tom, you don't have a Hawaiian shirt on today, or does Jim? Oh, I don't either, but today is National Hawaiian Shirt Day.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's National Pineapple Day, but okay, I'll go with the shirt.
All right. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, off and running in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, where we have five radio stations now under the Bustos Media banner, five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. In January, the Buckmaster Show begins our 15th year with the radio program, and that will put me about 37 years now in radio and television in Tucson broadcasting. Our worldwide live listening on my program, you can find that at buckmastershow.com. Also the place for pretty much every show we have done over the last 14 and a half years. The Buckmaster Show live line for our telephone interviews. That live line is 790-2040, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. On Friday, we do our media partner shout-outs. TucsonSentinel.com, the organization, the online news service, where my friend Jim Nintzel is the political reporter. And thanks to A Report for America. I got that in there, Jim.
I appreciate the shout out to this incredible nonprofit organization that's putting reporters and newsrooms all across the country, including here in Tucson, with both Tucson Sentinel and over at Tucson Luminaria, our other nonprofit news source, does also have a Report for America cadet working for them.
Very cool. News, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Dan Shear and the team. Thanks, Dan, for all your support over the years. And we have a new media partner, and soon to have the Buckmaster Show logo and link, I think, coming up soon over at Tucson Agenda. So we think Kurt and Caitlin over there are doing a good job, Jim.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, we really are seeing these little green shoots of independent media organizations mm-hmm. rising as our legacy media organizations continue to struggle.
And I think we're better served.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, the more reporters we have out there doing the work of informing the community, I think the better our community is going to be.
All right. Our Friday Focus interview on the live line, Dr. Teresa Cullen, the Pima County Health Director. Dr. Cullen is a former Assistant U.S. Surgeon General who retired from the United States Public Health Service back in 2012. At that point, she had put in 25 years of active duty before becoming the chief medical officer and director of health information informatics for the Veterans Health Administration. She's a graduate of the University of Arizona College of Medicine and serves, I believe, still serving as a clinical associate professor over there. Dr. Cullen, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Are you still over doing some of the teaching?
We still teach. I must admit that I'm not actively practicing medicine right now, but we're still teaching at the university, yes.
All right. Jim and I have a lot of items in our stack of stuff to talk with you about. Let's begin with COVID-19, 4.5 years after the pandemic started. It may not be a pandemic, but the outbreak this summer in some areas like California has certainly been very serious. Some of your thoughts on that, Dr. Cullen?
Yeah, you know, I agree with that assessment. If we go and we look at the last 3 to 4 years, because now we do have all those years of data, right, Bill, we're able to see that we have these two times in the year when we have spikes or increased cases. Happens to be fall and winter, November, December, January, and then in the summer. In Tucson, because so many people are inside when it gets so hot and then a little little humidity there, we tend to see another increase in the caseload. we believe, remember, COVID is a respiratory virus transmitted through the air. So when people are in close contact inside, then obviously we will see an increased number of cases.
It's hard to get a handle, though, on the number of cases because so many people are testing at home, Dr. Cullen.
Right. We believe the vast majority of cases we do not know about. What we do know, because we still are tracking cases regularly, that compared to last year, our COVID cases are now going down a little. So they seem like they peaked probably 2 weeks ago. However, we don't really know that, Bill. It's a really good point. Instead of tracking cases, then, which we still do, we really look at hospitalizations. And our hospitalization data is probably fairly accurate. And our hospitalization data for the last few weeks has been higher than we would have expected, but it does seem right now to be going down again.
Let's bring my friend Jim Ninsel into our conversation. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, the county used to have a fairly robust wastewater tracking program that was helping you also keep aware of what was happening in the community. What is going on with the wastewater tracking?
This is such a great question because many of us believe that wastewater, perhaps not now, but in the very near future, will become a really important part of our analytics and assessment. We are still tracking wastewater. However, what we do is we supply the wastewater samples, and the running of the wastewater is done through the state in conjunction with CDC. Recently, that data has not been put on the website. That's not because Pima County isn't participating. It's because of some issues that came about quality between the state and the CDC. And we hope to be able to continue doing what we're doing, but also make sure that the data is available for the community. And Jim, if I could just take one more second, we also want to know what the community thinks about wastewater. So we've conducted 4 community meetings to just get the input from the community. Do you want to know about wastewater? How should we let you know? Do you think it's important? And we've just wrapped those up. So we're hoping to be able to pull that data together and to give us some more guidance about what the community thinks about wastewater.
Can you track other diseases through the wastewater? Is it solely COVID that would be the what you're looking for?
Well, right now, the only thing we're looking for is COVID. But you may recall now, I think it's almost 2 years ago, that where in New York, upstate New York, they found polio in wastewater. So we know you can track other diseases. There are places that track opioids, but there's lots of issues with that because the opioid in the wastewater, it doesn't know whether it's been prescribed or it's illicit. So not very helpful, I think. But definitely, I think as the science of wastewater improves, we will see a commitment to use that to track other things. But in Pima County right now, the only thing we are collecting samples for is for COVID.
The symptoms for this particular outbreak, are they similar to a bad cold, or what are you hearing?
Yeah, Bill, that is what we're hearing. Many people are actually indicating that in the early onset, they think they have the flu, little myalgias, you know, muscle aches, headache, cold, lots of sneezing, which people may not have had before when they've had COVID, and some GI things, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea. You'll recall in 2020, when we had the Delta variant, in quotes, that's when we had a lot of GI stuff, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. So we're starting to see that again. But once again, it really is individual. So some people, you know, the headache may be the most important. The other people may be fever or a sore throat. People talk a lot about my throat feels like there's a razor in it. Strong sore throats. Yeah.
My friends at the Pima County Library are reporting they've run out of COVID tests in some of the libraries. Will they be getting more of those? Do you know?
Yes, we're hoping they would. You know, the vast majority of our COVID tests came to us from the federal government through the state to us. Now, we tend to if the state goes out and says, oh, there's things available, we tend to be right. Okay, we're sending a truck right now to get them. Mm-hmm. So that supply is diminished because the federal stockpile doesn't have very many tests yet. We are hoping that we can pull together some additional funding so that we can buy tests and continue to distribute them. Because even if people don't tell us if they're sick, if they tested positive, our hope is that because they took the initiative to test, they're then doing the appropriate things, which is, you know, masking if they're in public, staying home till their symptoms get better.
Can we talk a little bit about the new vaccine? The manufacturers claim the vaccines are ready for shipping. They're just waiting for federal government approval.
Right. And that is true. So the vaccines have to go through a fairly rigorous evaluation process. They are in the midst of that. What we are hearing is that we believe they will be available sometime late August. Now, I'm a little skeptical of that because it's already August 16th, right. But definitely into September. And at that same time, the flu vaccine, the updated flu vaccine for this year should be available.
I always have a reaction to the flu shots, so I don't, excuse me, not the flu shots, but to the COVID shots. So unlike the advice that's been given, oh, you can take the shot, the flu and the COVID shot at the same time, I think I'll be doing them on separate occasions.
Yeah, and that is fine, too. We would just encourage people to ensure that they get both, even if it's, you know, a couple weeks apart.
So would the advice be at this point, hold off until the new vaccine is available, or go get a shot if it's been, you know, 6 months since your last one?
Yeah. Jim, it's such a great question, right? And once again, it's not one size fits all. So what we are saying is that if you're healthy and you're non-immunocompromised, you should at this point wait. Because the assumption is that if you get COVID, you're not going to get seriously ill and need to be hospitalized. However, those who are immunocompromised, we always use this age cutoff, 65 or over, but I would encourage people to think of their own health because some 68, 70-year-olds are so helpful, they really probably are not at increased risk. If those people have not had a shot for 4 months, we would encourage them to get the current vaccine that's out there. Once again, to put a plug for Pima County, they can go to any of our health clinics and get it. So for most people, wait. You're talking about probably, hopefully, at most 4 to 5 weeks and go get a shot then.
And how often should people be looking to get a COVID vaccine shot? And how does, if you've had COVID and you I guess, have the natural antibodies, how does that figure in?
Okay, so that's a great question. And thank you for indicating that to me. So I'm going to talk first about if you've had COVID. If you've had COVID recently and you've had vaccines, you're what we call hybrid immunity. So you've gotten immunity from the vaccine, you've gotten immunity because of your own antibodies. If you've had COVID, like say you get COVID this week, we would not recommend that you get the shot in 4 weeks. We would recommend that you wait 2 to 4 months, and you can make that decision with your doctor or your healthcare provider, but you don't need to get it right away because you're right, you do have immunity. If you have gotten, and I can't remember what your other question was about, if you've gotten multiple vaccines,
how often should you be looking to get a shot? What's the advice at this point?
You know, I think what the advice is going to be, Jim, and I don't know exactly, but I think it's going to be once in the fall, which is where we're coming up to, those who are immunocompromised, high risk, perhaps in the spring. And then for most of us, hopefully it'll just be once a year, just like the flu. That's where the CDC is really trying to go. Obviously, the caveat to that is if a new variant comes up, right? So if something new all of a sudden hits, that may really change on a dime, and we may see another new vaccine come out.
And how quickly do they turn vaccines around once a new variant emerges?
Well, you know, they've been pretty efficient and effective lately, usually within 3 to 4 months. Now, some of that is because the new variants aren't, it's not like the whole, all of COVID changed. It's not SARS-CoV-2, COVID all of a sudden got all different. It's, remember the spikes, the image of the spikes you know, that red thing with the spikes on it. Just some of the spikes changed. And that's what the new vaccine would be geared to respond to, changes in that.
All right. Before we take the break, after we do take the break with Dr. Cullen, we're going to talk about the heat and Pima County's proposed heat ordinance. But let's go to Sharon on the live line. Sharon has a question, and I don't want to keep Sharon over during the break. So go ahead, Sharon. You're with Dr. Cullen.
Thank you, Bill. Dr. Cullen, there's been some grim statistics about children in Arizona and in Pima County, complications and low birth weight at pregnancy, low immunization and vaccination rates for children under five. Is Pima County going to be planning any special reach out evening clinics or weekend clinics or anything with back to school to help families?
This is such a great question, and actually not only did we plan them, we've been doing them. So we've opened up Saturday clinics. We're rotating which of our clinics have Saturday clinics because we want to be cognizant of especially working families that aren't able to get to our clinics, which are primarily 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. In addition, we do back to school clinics, and we've been doing them through the summer. If there's a specific area or any listener that would like to ensure that we can manage a back-to-school clinic to their facility, their school, we would love if you would reach out to us, and we'll try to respond to that. So great question. Thanks for asking that.
All right. We'll take a break right here. More with Dr. Cullen, the Pima County Health Director, and Jim Nintzel with me on our Friday Focus interview. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org. Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday focus interview, Dr. Teresa Cullen, who is the Pima County Health Director, with us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Jim Nintzel is with me. He is the political reporter. That's his main deal over at the TucsonSentinel.com. Dr. Cullen, it has been a long, hot summer. Pima County Health Department wants to hear from people about the Extreme Heat Community Survey, which I guess is wrapping up because the Board of Supervisors is holding a hearing, a public hearing, I think it's Monday, about the county's proposed heat ordinance. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that is Monday. That's my understanding, too, that there we have worked cross-county to help inform a heat safety ordinance. Remember, the goal of this is really prevention. Ensure that people that live and work in Pima County are protected from heat. So it's been developed with a lot of input from the community, as well as from, I will say, from the health, looking at the data seen historically and looking at what are best practices that other communities have been able to do.
If approved, this ordinance would go into effect 30 days after the date of adoption. And by the way, the meeting will be at 9 a.m. In the Pima County Board of Supervisors hearing room. Can you tell us about any of the feedback you've been getting, Dr. Cullen?
Yeah, so the feedback was collected at the administration level, but I have been privy to review it and help comment on it to figure out how we can ensure that people's concerns are included in the final ordinance directive that will be presented to the board. So most of the feedback has been very, very positive. If you look at what's being proposed, it's really developing a heat safety plan for contractors who have contracts with the county. Now, this is independent of anything that the city of Tucson has been working on. It's also consistent with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, has pushed out recently in terms of best practices to ensure that individuals as well as organizations and corporations can address what the needs of their workers are. The focus is really on helping educate the organizations and the contractors about what they should pay attention to with their workforce. So some of the things, Bill, are I don't think are controversial at all, right? They're like, do you have a way that people can get water? Do you have opportunities for rest, access to shade? Do you have monitoring protocols that would allow you to have, in a sense, an early alert, in quotes, of an employee or a group of employees that may be getting in trouble because of heat exposure? So the ordinance itself includes a lot of specific details about the required elements of the safety and prevention plan that we hope contractors will develop in addition and in response to the board passing this ordinance.
The county is also opening up cooling centers in recent weeks. Yeah. I think this is the first summer you've done that. Why are these important? And can you just kind of give us an outline of what this what these cooling centers look like?
Yeah. So the county is selling two centers right now, which we have never done before, other than the library has always functioned as cooling centers. So I don't want to diminish their role because it's been so important. We have the Cooltainer as a structure that comes to the state in Tahoe, We are running that on Saturdays and Sundays because there's nothing out there right then. And then at the Mission Annex off of Silver Bell, we actually opened another facility there right next to right behind where the jail is on Silver Bell that enables people to go in there and altogether county has 39 cooling centers, lots of different hours there. Some are open only in the morning, some are open all the time. Most all of our libraries are. What we know is that cooling centers save lives. Now, there's a lot of discussion about what I just stated. However, in Arizona, and I don't want to talk about cooling centers throughout the country because I don't know that data well, but in Arizona, we know in Maricopa and Pima County that giving people access to a cooling center where they can go, especially think of it, your air conditioner's out, your electricity is out. Think of all the storms we've had recently. Where can you go and get cool? Not only you, but your family and anyone that's vulnerable.
All right, let's go to the live line real quickly. Jeff has a question for Dr. Cullen. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, thank you. I was just wondering if we might also get a corresponding cold ordinance, a cold amendment of some kind, so that contractors could have people put their coats on when it gets cold?
Well, I don't think I thank you for Jeff for that. I don't think you're going to see that from the health department. I appreciate your comment, however.
Just to follow up on that, people are saying, it's always been hot in the summer here. What mm-hmm. is different
yeah.
that you are trying to address?
You know what? It has always been hot. It hasn't always been this hot. And the other thing is, if we follow the temperatures, and if people are interested, we have a lot of on the website. We post hospital visits with heat-related illness symptoms. What we know is when it gets hot, and the graphs are very dramatic, it gets hot, all of a sudden there's an increased number of visits to the hospitals. Now, many of those visits are not by choice. They're by people calling 911 or an EMS that they've noted somebody on the ground. So the concern has been the increasing heat that we are seeing and the decreasing cooling at night. You know, we've had a great monsoon season, at least around my neighborhood, it's been a great monsoon season. So I think we may have forgotten that even despite the great monsoon season, overall, the nighttime temperatures are not going down where they have historically. This is all related to what we call our basal temperature. So, you know, when they take your temperature at the doc's office and it's 98.6, if the temperature, if the what we call the ambient temperature, the temperature outside for you or wherever you're sitting, because you could be inside and not have air conditioning, doesn't get your core temperature can't heal, can't go down. And when that happens, you're more at risk for disease and for chronic health conditions. So that's really what, from the health department, the perspective is for this.
That it's hotter for a longer period of time during the day, and
yeah.
your body doesn't have that
yeah.
chance to cool it down?
Right. And I also did just read that I think Phoenix yesterday, I think that they surpassed the highest number of days that have been over 100 degrees in a row. The number of days with heat warnings between May 1st and August 10th for Pima have been 25 days. So that is like a 3.5 month period. In between May and July, we've had 15 certified heat-related deaths, almost 800 hospital visits in that same time for heat-related illness. So not because you had diabetes and they found you were hot, but really you've gone to the hospital because it's been hot.
All right. Dr. Cullen, Jim and I both agree we want to talk a little bit about the fentanyl crisis. Could you address that, please?
Yes. You know, the fentanyl crisis continues to remind all of us of how critical it is that we figure out ways to be more, to enact more prevention and response. You may be aware that every day in the U.S., the equivalent of a 737 going down is due to fentanyl deaths. So that's the number of people that are dying in the U.S. In Pima County, last year we had over 500 deaths. We do seem to be stabilizing, but that's nothing to be proud about, right? I mean, it's still too high a number. However, the city, the county, the other jurisdictions are working very closely together. We have lots of initiatives. Many of them revolve around how do we initiate prevention? How do we work to ensure that people don't accidentally take fentanyl or intentionally take an illicit substance and die from it without knowing it was fentanyl? In addition, we have distributed, as you know, Bill, we've talked about this in the past, you know, tens of thousands of doses of Narcan in the community. We're lucky we have a great relationship with law enforcement and first responders. They help us identify where the areas where individuals have historically overdosed and or sadly enough died from an overdose. And we've been working really closely in those areas to ensure we can do appropriate interventions. However, there are two groups that we are increasingly worried about. One is people over 65. Our number of deaths due to overdose in people over 65 is up over 50%. None of us are really sure about that, what the cause of that is. We're doing some in-depth evaluation. The other group that is really at risk that we didn't think about, and knock on wood, we finally figured it out, are people that work construction. People that work in the trades kind of make sense, right? They're using their bodies every day. They're in high-risk occupations. They're probably going home with a little pain in their shoulders. And they may be in the heat, and we know heat is a cofactor for overdose. So overall, the city of Tucson signed the intergovernmental agreement with us. So we have Marana, the city of South Tucson, the city of Tucson, and Pima County all working together. We'll be working on appropriate distribution of the opioid settlement dollars to apply that to things that we know have been proven to be effective. For all of us in the community, though, we have a lot of work to do. We need to, you know, make sure that if we see someone who's in pain, physical, psychological, spiritual, emotional pain, that we reach out a hand to them. We have to do this as a community. The health department obviously has a really critical role, but all of us do to try to make our community more healthy.
You know, the Pima County or the Biden administration actually has released new guidelines for nursing homes. And it seems as though probably a lot of nursing homes across the country are struggling to meet those standards. How's Pima County doing?
No, I think you're right. People are struggling to meet those standards. We work closely with our nursing homes because of two reasons. One is because if they have a communicable disease outbreak, not just COVID, but say a GI outbreak because of food, we work really closely with their infection control people. We also worry about in nursing homes and sometimes in assisted living, though more in long-term care centers, what we call hospital-acquired infections. However, it's not hospital-acquired. It's congregate care-required infections. So the new guidelines, I think people will struggle to implement them. I believe the health department is a helping hand and a support to the long-term care centers and the assisted living. We actually run a call every month still with the groups that we were able to pull together during COVID. So we have a good relationship there, Jim, but it's a really good question. You know, there's other new guidance coming out. The hospitals are now going to have to, CMS guidance, that the hospitals now have to report COVID cases again. We're hoping that that will help us track. And I think what you're seeing is this belief that clinical care, public health, we all need to work together. We have to create learning health systems, both for clinical and public health. And hopefully you will see that in the Pima County community as we go forward, that we're all going to be working for the same thing.
All right. We're going to have to wrap it up. Dr. Cullen, thank you very much. Any final thoughts on your part, please?
No, I just want people to know that the health department is there for them. If they need anything, please reach out. Please let us know. We don't have eyes and ears everywhere. And so if there's something going on that we should know, please let us know so we can respond.
All right,
and
Dr. Cullen.
Thank you to Bill and Jim.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a great weekend. Thank you. All right. We'll pause right here. A couple of quick comments with Jim Nintzel when we come back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Good information from Dr. Cullen. I did take away, Jim Nintzel, that she felt that maybe we have peaked. I hope that's the case with the COVID cases this summer.
It does seem that way. You know, for a while, every time I'm still a novid, believe it or not. I have not yet had the bug, but that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And but I keep hearing from people around me, oh, I've got COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, the
a lot of first timers, actually.
The Sentinel team, a lot of them came down with it after a trip to the Investigative Reporters and Editors Conference.
So, there you go. You know, get on an airplane. Taking a chance, right?
It was a van ride to Anaheim. Oh. I'm grateful I took my own car, I would say, okay, on that particular trip.
Okay, Jim, only a couple of minutes. What's going on with your political beat?
Oh, you know, we've got the first League of Women Voters forum for the general election is coming up tomorrow, mm-hmm, at the Wilmot Library at 2 p.m. For the District 4 supervisors race. That's the seat now held by Steve Christie. That's you know, the East Side, Vail,
Corona de Tucson. Lone Republican on the board. Right?
Lone Republican on the board. He is facing a challenge from Democrat Vanessa Bechtel, who, mm-hmm, is making her first run for office. She used to be with somebody called the Santa Cruz Heritage Alliance and moved on to Visit Tucson. And this is a district that is, you know, pretty heavily Republican. But The Democrats have taken a look at the numbers, and they note that Katie Hobbs won in that district, that Mark Kelly won in that district, Andre, the Secretary of State, Fontes won in that district, as well as the Attorney General, Chris Mays. So they're saying, you know, there are opportunities for a Democrat to win, that there could be some crossover voting. Now, I certainly think that Steve Christie, a two-time incumbent, has the advantage in that race. But, you know, voters will get a chance to compare and contrast the candidates tomorrow if that's their thing at the library.
And you're trying to kind of profile all the five supervisorial district races.
That's
and where... some of them not that competitive, to say the least.
Yeah, but as we did District 3 last week. That's where Jennifer Allen came out of that four-way primary with more than 50% of the vote, and she's up against Janet Wittenbrocker, who ran for mayor in the city of Tucson, made her political debut last year. Certainly that's a district that only one Republican has ever won in the many years since they expanded to five seats back in the early 70s.
So that's Sharon Bronson's old district.
Sharon Bronson had it for, you know, 27 years until she had to resign to recover from that fall. So it's an open seat, which is always a little more interesting than one that is not. And I think District 1, you know, that's a very narrowly split swing district where Rex Scott, the current Democratic supervisor, first Democrat to win that district since the 1970s, and he's up against the same guy, Republican, who ran against him last time, Steve Spain, who was closely allied with the previous supervisor, Allie Miller. I think Rex won that by 730 votes, very close race. It has become a little more Democratic, and he definitely has the advantage in fundraising and incumbency. But, you know, that's another one that on paper, at least, seems very close.
Okay, Jim, and about Tucson Sentinel, you never know, somebody's listening, maybe they've never heard of it. What is it?
So Tucson Sentinel, founded by our editor and publisher Dylan Smith about 15 years ago, one of the very first online news organizations. And that guy, I got to say, props to him for sustaining this thing over that long a period of time. Not easy to do. A lot of
especially
these things,
in the early stages of online services across the country, he was right there.
He was. You know, he worked at the Tucson Citizen, and that shut down. And he said, I'm going to do this. And, you know, God bless him for that, because he has held it together all these years with support from the community. We are a nonprofit, so if you're out there and thinking that our concerns about the diminishment of the legacy media, you know, if you think news is important, please support the Tucson Sentinel.
TucsonSentinel.com, easy to find. Okay, Jim Nensel, thank you very much. Weekend Watch is coming up. Jim, you going to stick around, hear what Dan's got to offer us?
Oh, yeah, I'm in town this weekend.
All right.
I want to find out what to do.
Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
It is time to stir it up. Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where we like to say it's going to be about 10 degrees cooler. And that's pretty much holding up. They're in the low 90s over in Silver City. And the reason, it's about a mile high. That's about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, depending on where you are in the Silver City area, which means it's going to be cooler. Start your planning by visiting their great website, southwestnewmexico.org. Here's some more good news. It's only about a three-hour drive. And speaking of good news, he always has some great tips for us, the host of Weekend Watch, Dan Gibson. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm great. And you?
Doing well. What do you got for us? And your buddy Jim Nintzel has stuck around. He wants to hear what's going on.
Well, yeah, I assume I'm going to see Jim at all of these things. Man about town, Jim Nintzel, ever present, that guy. Bar Crisol, which is a great spot to usually get some mezcal or other agave-based spirits, they're having a special occasion this Sunday, the 18th. It's Spanish cuisine by their friends at the Chiquillo food truck, and music by guitarist John Bonielos. Starts at 6 p.m. It lasts until it's sold out. They'll also have Spanish wines and vermouth available, croquetas, tortilla española, patatas bravas, all the Spanish dishes you would expect, all there at El Crisol, their location on, just south of the convention center in Barrio Viejo. Should be a good time. Get there early, because if it sells out, it's just going to be disappointing everybody.
Okay. What's next?
Big. It's actually a big pop-up era right now. Wednesday, it'll look a little forward ahead to Wednesday, August 21st. Tough Luck Club in the basement of everything's blanking me. Riley is having a pop-up with Phoenix-based burger sensation Bad Jimmy's. Bad Jimmy's was a pop-up around the Phoenix area. Then they got a permanent location on Pierce Street in downtown Phoenix. Apparently, very excellent burgers. The Smash Burger is big right now, so they do those. Push the onions down into the patty. That'll be from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. There will also be cocktail specials at Tough Luck Club. Smash Burgers, double stacked Smash Burgers, fries, wings, and more.
Hey, that Smash Burger sounds good, doesn't it, Jim?
It certainly does.
Go for a smash burger, the way they smash those onions into the meat.
It's a special guest appearance, too.
Yeah, so there you go.
Give that a try.
All right. Next.
Yeah, one off. You don't have to go to Phoenix for it. It'll be right here. Tucson Legends, one of my favorite places to get a drink, and I think probably the beginning of Tucson's craft cocktail culture. Scott & Co., they had some fire damage. They've been closed for a while, but Barbada, which is in the, again, another bar in a basement. Barbada is in the basement of Bada, also by the Riley folks. They are having a recreation of Scott and Company's cocktail bar for one night only. It's called Barbada & Co. That's happening Sunday, August 17th. Got to make your decisions here. Maybe you can hit up this and the Spanish thing. You just got to time it right. That's from 5 p.m. to midnight. Siren Weiss and Carl Gornowski, who worked at Scott & Company, will be bartending there. It was really great, and they're celebrating drinks that were on the menus from 2010 to 2012. So if you're a part of that time period or you just love a great craft cocktail, that's going to be absolutely worth checking out on Sunday.
Sounds like legacy cocktails there, Dan Gibson.
There's one that's going to be $75 if somebody wants to buy me that they can feel free. It's a little rich for my blood, but nonetheless. The rest of them are like $14. It'll be fine.
So. What could be in the $75 pour? Wow.
You don't ask, you just say yes. You know, that's it. No, it actually has a 12-year Japanese single malt whiskey in it. So, and I think you get a back rub. It's not on there, but I assume the back rub is included. And a green chartreuse rinse. The green chartreuse, that bottle goes for $99 right now. So.
Whoa. All right.
Rest of drinks, 13 to 15. So yeah. don't get shook by the $75.
Actually, I got another minute. So if you've got another one, I'll take it.
You know what? Yeah, absolutely. Sand Reckoner Vineyard, they have had a tasting room for the last 7 years on 6th Street, rather. They will be closing their tasting room. They said it's been a tough decision, but they're happy for the joyous memories. It's open on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. for the rest of the month, and then as they get closer to the end of the month, they'll be having a garage sale and some other surprises. If you haven't been to the Sand Reckoner tasting room or you want to celebrate it one last time, check it out this Saturday or the rest of the month.
Jim, any comments for Dan?
Oh, I just said, you know, if you're downtown on Saturday night at 6 o'clock, also, Tucson's birthday party at the
point.
Presidio Yaki Deer Dancers,
yes.
Which is not something you see every day, and a whole bunch of muskets, and I imagine they've got $75 cocktails there, too.
Probably, and at least a Przelski, I would assume.
Oh, yeah, there'll be plenty
of
cosplay.
All right, Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks for your support for our show. Appreciate it.
Always, anytime.
Okay, Jim, any final thoughts on the weekend? You're looking forward to a good one.
Yeah, you know, we've got the debate. We've got the birthday party for the city. 249 years old.
Yeah, we're going to do a big 250th. We actually talked about that on the show with our historian, Ken Scoville, already planning for the 250th anniversary. So.
And the Mineral Museum downtown, I think it has $5 admission through tomorrow. So if you want to check that out and you haven't yet,
all right.
Good spot.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks, as usual, to Mr. Tom Fairbanks, engineer and producer, and the entire team at Bustos Media. We're going to end on a very personal note. Ann Birch Buckmaster, my dear wife of 51 years, died a year ago tomorrow at Pepe's House Hospice. Let's honor her with John Denver and Annie's song.
You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come let me love you, let me give my life to you. Let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your arms, let me lay down beside you, let me always be with you. Come let me love you, come love me. Thank you. like the night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my sails.